it is gone. A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 436. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. And coming up, we're going to talk about the Phil's front office because, oh boy, have they had themselves a weekend. An interesting report in one of the New York newspapers that proved to most likely be not correct. It was not later confirmed by a Phillies beat writer that it was some of the details in it were not correct. But it tells a larger tale, I think, of where the fan base is at regarding this baseball team right now. And so we'll talk about that. We'll talk about some unfortunate decisions made by the Phillies front office in terms of personnel. And a former Philly has a big year over in Korea and is a champion. So we'll talk about him a little bit as well. And joining me on the podcast once again are my good friends Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Liz, of course, you know from Yahoo Sports. You follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Hi, Liz. How are you?
I'm peachy keen. I'm excited to talk about all these fun things today.
Yeah, it's a good time to be a Phillies fan, is it not? I mean, we're just rolling in good times here.
Everything is great. I don't know what you're talking about.
And Justin Clue, of course, from Baseball Prospectus. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. And, of course, Justin and Liz with all the other podcasts that they do for us here at The Good Fight. Justin, how are you, pal?
You know, I understand how impactful the 5 years of watching this team be a powerhouse in the National League really were on us just as fans and as people. I think that's inarguable. But I was thinking today how living through an era like that at a time when we were like adults but not old enough that we were handcuffed to a ton of responsibilities and we could just enjoy the team, it really makes times like this a little, you're able to laugh at times like this a little more easily. I think if we were doing all this, which we wouldn't be doing all this, I think, if those 5 years hadn't happened. But if we were doing all this and having never seen the Phillies, you know, won the World Series or like even made the playoffs, this would be a lot more miserable. And I know some people are really miserable about the Phillies right now. But, you know, I think hosting a podcast about the forgotten and dumbest innings in Phillies history, it's clearly you find a way to laugh at the incompetence this franchise has historically shown in a lot of ways. And they're kind of doing that right now. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm just saying how lucky we are that we kind of got a life preserver in the form of a World Series title. In your case, John, two in one lifetime, which feels unspeakable.
Yeah, well, I don't remember much about the first one, obviously. I was four, but
you were alive.
But
you
I was alive for it. I was breathing in air while it was taking place, absolutely. And so you're right. I was alive for that one, but it was kind of interesting. I mean, I think that when I started following baseball in the mid-80s, like 86, 87 is when I started to really get into it, I didn't have any reference to the 80 team or the 83 team that went to the World Series and lost. To me, the Phillies were always kind of a team that was out of the playoffs when I started watching them, and it went a while, you know, 7 or 8 years before 93 rolled around, and then that was such a strange season, and then they went back and were wandering in the wilderness again. It was, you know, for the older generation, I guess when those 80s teams started coming around and you had Steve Jeltz and Somwell and Von Hayes and the end of Schmidt's career, and they were kind of trying to figure out what they wanted to be post-Mike Schmidt, that's kind of, I think, what it feels like now for us as Phillies fans in the post-Jimmy Rollins, Chase Utley, Ryan Howard, Cole Hamels era, trying to figure out this team, trying to figure out what they want to be. And, you know, it seemed for a little while there when John Middleton first really took the reins that they wanted to be the Yankees of the South, you know, of the southern part of the Northeast. Not the South, obviously. I only said that
Yankees
because
of slightly further south.
Yes, further south. I only said that because remember Jimmy Rollins referred to Middleton as Steinbrenner South or something like that. So that was stuck in my head, I think.
Oh,
when I
Jimmy.
Said, yeah. Oh, well, how little did Jimmy know? But that's where we were. We thought this was just going to be a big spending team, and you know they had some high draft picks. I mean, at the time, they had a really good farm system in 2016, 2017, one of the better farm systems in baseball, and you knew that they were just on the cusp of getting ready to spend a bunch of money, and so you thought that's what this team was going to be. They're going to be a big spending team. They're going to wield the almighty dollar, all that Comcast money that they got. They were going to be a force, and up until this past year, they have been. They spent a lot of money, wouldn't go over the luxury tax for reasons past understanding, but now here we are in an off season where John Middleton is getting absolutely destroyed by the national media, by the local media, and by the fan base. And the fan base is turning. The fan base is turning. For those of you listening who have already decided you don't want to follow this team next year, you are not alone. I know that there are many of you out there, because I see it a lot on Twitter. I'm sure you guys see it a lot on Twitter. People are just like, I'm done with this team, because you've seen them almost telegraph to the fan base this offseason that we're not going to do anything. We are not going to do anything. We are not going to be players in free agency. We are going to scale it way back. And I know the Phillies are not alone. There's a lot of teams in baseball. But here in John Middleton, you had a guy who said, I want my bleeping trophy back, and they wanted to spend stupid money. And he seemed like he was going to be Steinbrenner South. And then the news came out this weekend that they fired 80 full-time employees because of their revenue losses from last year during the holidays. I know a lot of these people took buyouts, which I'm sure helped them in the short term, but you hope that they're able to get something else before those buyouts kind of run out, you know. But there's a lot of people that didn't get buyouts. There's a lot of people whose contracts weren't renewed, and some of the people, their names we know, most of them we don't know. And so for us as fans looking at this organization, at this team, who I can almost assure you made money every single year. I don't know what they did with their money every year once they made it. I don't know how much they reinvested in the team every year, because we're not able to see their books. But we are told they lost a lot of money last year, and that this is a business, and this is what happens when you lose a ton of money in business. Justin, let me start with you on this first point, because there's going to be something else we're going to talk about in the New York, I think it was a New York Daily News piece about what Middleton told his baseball ops people. But talking about the layoffs and the firings, for a guy who's worth over $3 billion to lay these people off, I'm trying to make sense of it. Have you been able to make sense of it?
Well, not really. And that's the problem, is that anytime, everybody is well aware of John Middleton's worth at this point. He's been Googled. It's been screen capped. It's been tweeted. Like, it's, everyone is aware of that $3.4 billion number. And it's such an astronomical amount of self-worth that it is hard to imagine that you would take a hit so large that you would have to cut the jobs of 80 full-time employees like that. It just seems like, why are people's entire jobs getting cut when you could take less of a hit, or take a significant hit, but still be in the same place you are and not have anybody have to lose their jobs? It just seems like, you know, that I don't know of any economists standing up and saying that, any business experts standing up and saying, like, yes, that's the move. When they say baseball is a business, what they're saying is, greed is fine. Like, it's fine, because being a business person, which your goal is to stay in business, and like, that's what they're saying this guy is doing. It feels more and more just like John Middleton's more interested in keeping John Middleton company. And I believe it was Kevin Cooney pointed out on Twitter that Middleton doesn't have like a business that is incoming cash flow. This is like, he's got his value and what cash on hand he has is still sort of a mystery. That's going to keep happening. It's going, because it's a mystery, is the frustrating part. Earlier in this offseason, Philadelphia Business Journal reported that the Phillies' losses this year were projected to be $186 million. This weekend, we were talking about it being $2 billion.
Right.
Then it was clarified that it was more like $145 million. That's three pretty different numbers. In some cases, very significantly. We're never going to know what the real number is. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, because the Phillies have decided no matter what that number is, they're not spending money. They're not going to, like you've said, they've telegraphed to the family, they're not interested in spending big money this season. And that really comes down to John Middleton, who we know is making the decisions. As a man who is a billionaire, it just seems, you know, if we're off base here, explain to us how someone who is worth $3.4 billion has to let 80 people go because they had an astronomically bad year. Yeah, it was a bad year, but the Phillies didn't go out of business, and I don't think the Phillies were in danger of going out of business. So it really comes down to, I'm happier with my money than I am worried about people losing their jobs.
Right. And Liz, I mean, I think Marcus Hayes actually wrote a really good piece about this and equated. He basically said, imagine these 80 people all made $100,000 a year, which they didn't. I mean, we know that not all these people didn't make $100,000. Maybe some made more, some made less. But if you do the math there, I believe it comes out to $8 million that you save by firing these people, or by letting go, by letting these people go. To someone who's worth $3.4 billion, that $8 million is a drop in the bucket. It might not even be a drop in the bucket. And he equated it to someone who, if you're somebody who makes $80,000 a year, that would be about the same as you saving $160. And so there's that. That's where the disconnect is with people. And I know it's not just John Middleton's money in this team, because he's not the sole owner of this team. There are a number of different owners in this team. The Buck family and a bunch of different people all have ownership stakes in this organization. And I know I'm not naive enough, Liz, to think like, okay, John Middleton's worth $3.4 billion, then this team has $3.4 billion to spend. Now, no one here is saying that. No one here does. Everyone here understands that these people who own baseball teams, they don't dump all of their own personal money into these teams, that they have a system and they have a business plan set up so that a portion of their personal worth goes towards this particular business or this particular venture. So, no, I mean, I worry that when people hear us talk about this, they think, well, you know, they put all their personal wealth into the team and you know, they have $3.4 billion to spend. Go spend. But when you're talking about laying people off during a pandemic like this, during the holiday season, and talking about saving $8 million when you've lost $165 or $145 or $2 billion, whatever it is, how much does that really help you?
I mean, $8 million is not that much. It's not that much. But I think now I can't get out of my head. Like, that's eight. These are 80 positions. And there are a lot of people whose contracts weren't renewed that aren't counted in this. It makes me wonder, when times are better, which they will be, you know.
Maybe as soon as next year.
Yep. In the same way that, you know, we feel that, you know, we know the team can. I'm sorry, I totally lost my train of thought.
Oh, that's all right. No, I mean, I'll put it to you this way. Like. And Liz, whenever you get whenever the train comes rolling back into the station.
Oh, no, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, okay.
I remember it now.
All right.
It makes me wonder, when the team is doing better, will they just restore those positions, hire new people? Like, when are the Phillies going to go on a big hiring binge? Will we even know about it? You know, you cut these jobs now. You don't know if they're ever coming back, because money is good. If the purpose of a baseball team is, it's no longer to win games, it's to make money. And so, yeah, it depresses me a whole lot to think about the Phillies just getting cheaper everywhere, not because they have to, but because they just want to.
I feel like it's and again, we're veering into business school territory, which I am completely unequipped.
I'm out of my depth there. Yeah.
But the idea of owning a baseball team, in the broadest sense, I feel like isn't because you're going to make money from it. It's because you're, in an ideal scenario, making it more valuable when you own it. And then when you sell it, that's when the big influx of money comes.
It's like when you buy a house.
Which is exactly how Middleton got his money, by making his dad's cigar company more valuable by accruing other entities and making them a part of it and then selling it. That's how he got his billions of dollars. So that's what I would assume his approach is to owning a baseball team. I'm not saying that excuses. There's so much about this that when you're not literate in all the business end of baseball, feels so much like this guy has this much money and people are losing their jobs. I don't know. It just feels a lot like there's plenty we don't know. The Phillies are like every other team in that they won't ever open their books the way no other team does. And there has been plenty of legitimate reports saying that, like, the Phillies have probably been hit harder by this than anybody else. But at the end of the day, you just can't put the two sides together that, you know, he's not working with, like you said, John, literally $3.4 billion. But whatever his operating capital is and whatever plan they put together that eliminates 80 jobs, I mean, do they really think that's never going to come back? Like, that they're never going to be, like you said, okay, well, they're going to hire more people again. Sure. But I don't know. It's tough when you don't know what's in their books, how much of it, you know, when we've seen the losses could be anywhere from 145 to $2 billion. It wasn't $2
billion. It wasn't $2
billion. But you know what I mean. Yeah. Like, there's discrepancies in the estimated losses they took this year. At the end of the day, 80 people who needed their jobs lost their jobs. And they've already, they had already cut scouts, too. Yep. We got reported that their scouting department took hits, analytic departments took hits. And you know, beyond a baseball team perspective, these are just people whose jobs, whose livelihoods are just gone. And when you look at John Middleton and his reputation at this point in Philly sports and among Phillies fans, and how much money you know he has, as a simpleton like me, it is difficult to link those two sides together and be like, well, it just had to be done.
I mean, how quickly does he think he's going to make this money up by saving $8 million? Like, he's going to make it up by not signing JT Realmuto and keeping the payroll low. But, like, so what is $8 million compared to the rest of that? Like, it's still nothing. It's still something. It's still a hit that you can and should take. Like, if this team doesn't have an emergency fund for something is really disturbing, because I know some teams do. Like, I know in football, I think the Green Bay Packers have a full year. They have a full year of payroll, like, locked away, because they're a publicly owned company.
Hmm.
And that's part of the deal. But that's also something that any team could just do.
Yeah.
Any team could just start to take some out of profits somewhere and stick it into, I don't know, just save it. Whatever the baseball team equivalent of a piggy bank is.
Right. I mean, it's not, you know, this isn't, you know, and that's what I think Justin and Liz and I are trying to say. It's not simple, but it seems incongruous to us to make this math work. And I think, you know, I think that's the bottom line. And the Phillies are not the only team doing this year. And that's the other thing. And that's what makes you stop and think, like, is this something that Major League Baseball teams have just wanted to do for a long time? And
I think we've talked about it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
This is a great excuse, because now they get to cut down and make more money. Imagine when times are good, 80, you know, they've got the salaries of 80 people, you know, and it just, you know, their medical benefits and everything else they pay for. They've got that back in the bank. They're not going to want to give that back up to hire people again. If they can make it work with that few, they're all going to.
You know, it's interesting, and I've seen this, I think, in Jim Salisbury's story, was that the Phillies over the last few years have invested a lot of money in hiring people in their front office, building an analytics department and bringing a bunch of different people in development and all that kind of stuff. But I feel like that was just the Phillies catching up to the rest of baseball. That wasn't necessarily, unless I'm I guess I could be mistaken about this, but from what I understand, the Phillies hires, especially in the analytics side of things, was really just catching up to what the rest of baseball had. It wasn't necessarily that they're going above and beyond and you know, are really now trimming the true fat. You know, the Phillies were just kind of catching up to what the rest of baseball was doing and the infrastructure that the other teams in baseball had. And so these last few years, when they have been reinvesting money in the team, it was more, it wasn't that they were gilding the lily here. You know, they were actually just trying to play catch up. And now they're kind of scaling that back a little bit. So, I mean, and the other thing we saw this weekend was, Justin mentioned it a couple of different times, that a reporter in the New York Daily News mentioned that John Middleton, he reported that a source told him John Middleton told the baseball ops people that the team lost $2 billion this year, and that because of their losses, they would not be able to pursue JT Realmuto or any other free agent. And I think everybody's first reaction was, John Middleton needs to sell the team if he lost $2 billion. And my first reaction was, I'm not really sure the source is correct on this thing. That's awful. It's really bad journalism on the part of this guy. I think it was Bill Madden. Is that his name? Okay. Mm-hmm. That's just bad journalism. You don't go with a single source on something that ludicrous. It's just, you that better be the GM telling you that if you're going to go with a single unnamed source on a story like that. So, like, bad sports journalism aside, that's totally brutal sports journalism to even go with that. But it was obviously, I think Rob Motti later confirmed that it was not, of course, $2 billion, which no one in their right mind believes this team lost $2 billion. And it started to come around, like, does John Middleton really expect people to believe that he lost $2 billion? I don't think John Middleton actually said that. So no. Give him some credit. Give him some credit, because I don't think he actually told anyone the team had lost $2 billion last year.
Easy was it to believe either a lie that was concocted and not considered how ridiculous it sounded, or just, well, I guess just that. Let's just go with that. And that's kind of the context of all this, is that in this country right now, it is far, far more easy for a lot of people to vilify a very rich man who's in the position John Middleton is in. So, yeah, with details notwithstanding, we are unaware of a lot of things. And obviously something like this has to be given some scrutiny, or at least a follow-up question when someone says a team lost $2 billion. That has to be considered. I mean, $2 billion is the amount of that it's going to cost them for delaying the Tokyo Olympics. $2 billion is how much the state of Illinois had to borrow in response to COVID-19. it's not what the Phillies lost this year, which someone asked me, hey, how much are the Phillies even worth? And I looked it up, and they're listed as being worth $2
billion. $2
billion. So they're down to zero if that report is true. And that's why they're not spending any money on free agents. They might just cut. They might just go down to like seven position players on the diamond this year.
They might just fold. They might just fold and stop being a team.
It was entertaining to even just consider that, because on the one hand, it was either what it was, which was wrongly reported, or the dumbest possible lie generated by people who thought they could actually fool people. So, I'm sorry, what was the question? It was an entertaining, like, an hour on Twitter at the
very
least.
Oh, yeah.
Which is probably a more entertaining hour than the Phillies are going to give us this offseason. It'll at least be in the top three.
Yeah, it made me think twice about the Phillies will sign JT Realmuto prediction. I will say that.
Because he reportedly said, I'm not doing that exact thing.
Yeah, but then, you know, I coupled that with the $2 billion remark, and I thought, okay, maybe my prediction is still safe, because I think that source was either being lied to by someone in the Phillies front office who, and that was my thinking, like, you know, what source are you going with there? Like, if it is somebody in the Phillies front office, what's the end game there? Are you trying to embarrass John Middleton, or are you trying to make it look like, oh, $145 million loss isn't actually all that bad, you know, comparing
it
to $2 billion.
Giving it to a reporter who, again, did not ask a follow-up question.
Right.
Then I would guess you are saying it sarcastically, assuming it will be taken as a joke.
Yeah. Well, I guess the question here is, I mean, and one of the other things that Rob Motti reported is that there was no organizational meeting last week. So it's not even that the number was wrong. It's the whole report of this conversation taking place was reportedly wrong. But
I love this whole story. I'm sorry. I love this whole
so
story.
Great.
I love the hour we spent thinking the Phillies were this stupid. I love the retraction with no correction offered in the article. Just deleted, thinking like, oh, well, we'll just forget about this. I love every part of this. I really do. It's unfair. Like, yeah, the Phillies definitely took like a hit this year or whatever. But like, yeah, this kind of, I felt like this woke a lot of people up.
You want to hear my crackpot theory?
Yeah,
yes.
I love it.
Okay. I think this was, I don't know if I actually think this, but this is what could have happened. John Middleton's son could have contacted this guy. And because he's an idiot, given this information in an effort to help his father lower expectations, either with or without his dad's knowledge. I think that's what this is, because it's stuff an idiot would say.
My proof is that this is something an idiot would do. I gotta tell you, that's some hard proof.
That's not crackpot. That's not crackpot.
Like, he, imagine this. Imagine John Middleton gathering all the employees he's about to fire or have already fired, or everyone who is left, who is left after everyone else has been fired, and giving them this speech about why. Like, how would this have occurred and why? In what universe does the owner of a team say to his employees, many of whom do not work in actual on-field related baseball operations,
right,
hey, we lost so much money that we're not going to sign JT Realmuto. Be sure to tell your friends.
Yeah, get it out there. Get it out there as much as you can.
That's
because,
the only
the world
thing
needs to know.
Because
do you
the $2 billion doesn't make sense, but the we're not going to sign JT Realmuto because we lost so much money, that makes sense.
That does make sense. Yeah,
that's
that does
the
make
thing
sense.
Actual thing that makes sense, which makes me think that that is the purpose of all of this.
Which is funny because if it was a purposefully told lie, that's such a huge, unbelievable amount of money that you're not even thinking, oh, I feel bad for the Phillies. You're thinking, yeah. Wow, the Phillies are somehow even dumber at this than everybody else. How did you do that?
I went on 97.5 The Fanatic on Saturday afternoon, and they asked me about this, and I said at the time, because this was before the other story came out, that if you were to believe that John Middleton actually said this to not just some yokel, but to his baseball ops people, the people who are probably more in tune with the inner workings of this baseball team, people who would know if the team actually lost $2 billion. If he told his baseball ops people that the team lost $2 billion, then he's either an egregious liar or he's the worst businessman in American history.
Uh-huh.
There's only two things that it could be. So that's it. You know, I don't think either of those two things are the truth,
no.
And so I went with doubting the actual report. So.
And that's why that little fact got vacuumed out of the article with no comment from the outlet in which it appeared.
Yeah.
Do you guys think
good
John
journalism.
Middleton was ever told that appeared in there, that number was out there?
I'm sure he knows.
You think so? In that hour before it got deleted? Okay.
The man knows how to use a phone. And he likes himself a lot. He cares a lot about what people think about him. And so if he doesn't have a Google alert set for himself, his assistant does.
Well, Liz hit on something there that I want to get to after we take a quick break. We'll tackle the fan base and where they are right now on this baseball team, given everything that's gone on over these last couple weeks and especially this weekend. I want to dive into that a little bit more. And we'll talk a little bit about Aaron Altherr. That's right, Aaron Altherr coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So right before the break, Liz said something interesting that I thought, you know, we should talk a little bit about. And you hit on it, Liz, about John Middleton knowing and caring about what the fan base thinks of him. We know that the fan base played a part in him going after Bryce Harper as opposed to Manny Machado. I think he knew that the fan base preferred Harper, and that's where I think he steered things, knowing that I think Matt Klentak wanted Manny Machado. And so he is a guy who is well aware of the fan base reaction. He's well aware that the 80 full-time employees losing their jobs is horrible for PR. No, I mean, this is something that I can't imagine Dave Montgomery's Phillies doing. Now,
no.
Dave Montgomery
they
never...
They would have found the $8 million.
They would have found it someplace else. They would have tried. I think they would have. Yeah.
Was it 8 million or was that just the metaphoric?
That was the metaphorical number. Sorry, okay. The metaphorical number, like 80 people making $100,000, but which again is probably even more than reality. But whatever the number is, the number of these 80 people, you'd find the money. He probably would have found the money someplace else, I would believe. And because the Phillies during a lot of Dave Montgomery's time were playing at Veterans Stadium, where they didn't have a lot of revenue, where the field, you know, the stands were a quarter full most of the season. So this is not a team that, you know, has historically swum in revenue. It's not until they moved to Citizens Bank Park that they really started to churn the fan base out and draw a lot of ticket sales. But even over the last couple of years, during the Gabe Kapler years, most of the seats were blue during the course of the regular season. There weren't many games where the stadium was more than half full, and most of the time it was probably somewhere between a quarter and a third full. So, and that's obviously not the same as being totally empty for an entire season. There obviously is a difference there, but the fan base has had such a strong reaction to what Andy McPhail has been saying this offseason, what John Middleton has been saying this offseason, to their lackadaisical approach to some of the front office people they're looking at and talking to. One of the other things I wanted to talk to you guys about is something that Peter Gammons tweeted out earlier this weekend about the gap between there have been the people that the Phillies have been talking to were surprised to hear that there's such a big gap between scouting and development.
I also liked the real under the radar blip of the Phillies talked to Theo Epstein. He was not interested in the job.
Hard to believe.
Listen, I dedicated a full podcast to that man.
Yeah,
and he
yeah.
just turned his nose up. I'm shocked.
He knows better. He doesn't want to be attached to this.
Smart man. This team just lost $2 billion.
We feel like we don't have a choice. He has a choice.
Well, as I think about this baseball team right now, I will tell the fan base and anybody who wasn't really following this team in the 90s, it was worse in the 90s. It really was. It was worse in 96 and 97, 98, 99. I've been asked a number, is this the lowest the franchise has been? Oh no, Justin, you know well from doing
Hell
the dirty
no.
inning. This is not even anywhere close to the lowest this
Our
franchise has been.
Our last episode was on the 1996 Philly. Well, right. a game that took place in 1996. And that was terrible. When you read about the status of a mid-season game and the context of the Phillies and what was going on and what were the narratives and everything, this team was in real bad shape.
Yeah.
And there was not a lot of hope for it getting cleaned up in the immediate or even short-term future.
Right. They didn't have a new stadium on the horizon. They couldn't draw any free agents. The reason the Jim Thome signing was so huge is because no one wanted to come to the Phillies. No, at least the Phillies got Bryce Harper, and at least they convinced Zach Wheeler to come this past offseason, and they've been able to draw some free agents, and you at least think that if and when fans start coming out to see the games that they'll spend money on the payroll again. But in the late 90s, boy, it was way worse than this.
When you talk about guys wanting to come here, I mean, not to make this literally an episode of The Dirty Inning, but the episode is about Todd Zeal.
Yeah.
And it stands out because Todd Zeal wanted to come to Philadelphia. And he wasn't a free agent. He just wanted to get out. A, he wanted to get out of St. Louis. B, he loved Lee Thomas. He and Lee Thomas had a great thing going, and his buddy Greg Jeffries was here, and he threw himself at the Philly. He wanted to come to Philadelphia specifically, according to what we found in our research, and it was just so foreign to read that someone. And don't get me wrong, Todd Zeal was a solid player, but he wasn't a thrilling player. The headline when the Phillies got him was literally "Phillies get Zeal, he won't sell tickets." So it's accurate. And but that's the level of guy and the context of guy who was willing to come here at this point in this team's history.
I mean, I don't know of that personally, but seeing my father react to all of this, who went to a lot of games in 1972. He saw a lot of Carlton, but he also saw a lot of losing. He
had to be cheap tickets.
Yes.
72. Oh my God.
Oh yeah. No, that was that was the season that Steve Carlton won half of the Phillies games. Literally half of their wins came from him. And seeing my father react to all of this I never know how much of it is him and his personality, but he takes it in stride. And every now and then he says, "They won the World Series twice in my lifetime." You know,
that's incredible.
I can't be, you know, he's seen it all.
He's seen two World Series titles and an Eagles Super Bowl championship.
Yeah.
Those are things I never thought I would see.
Oh, God.
In my
I know. That's why I don't get so mad anymore. You
exactly.
know,
yeah.
During the 25 year run between 83 and 2008, when I was most aware of sports in Philadelphia, when they got close a number of different times but never was able to seal the deal, and you had Joe Carter, and you had the Flyers getting swept by the Red Wings, and the Sixers and the Lakers, and just like one crushing disappointment after another. That was way worse than now. Now, I mean, we've experienced, like you said, a World Series title and a Super Bowl title. If we never win another thing, I will be satisfied. But that doesn't mean, you know, you still don't want the team to do well and to be the best it can be, and you're gonna get mad when they lose and don't perform up to expectations. But overall, I don't feel that burning agita, you know, deep inside my chest when, you know, another season turns into failure.
It's that deep sense of inferiority that we have inside of us as people from this area of the country. And seeing our sports teams, which have historically been so bad, knowing that they've done this and that they can do it, and there might be a little possibility of them doing that in the future, it gets rid of that. Some of us, at least, can be. It gets rid of that feeling that you're rotting from the inside out.
Right now, it's the unique dread of hopelessness in leadership. Because, yeah. I mean, John, you mentioned a couple of things. When you mentioned the Sixers and the Lakers, they lost to the Lakers in the finals. They got all the way to the finals. Yeah. That was an awesome, fun season
awesome, fun year.
Of Sixers basketball, obviously. And the Phillies have a bunch of years that were a lot of fun to be a Phillies fan until right at the end. The painful part about this, and like what's funny is that, as far as we know, John Middleton didn't really do anything wrong, or at least new, this weekend. It was just like a report came out. How it came out, we don't know. It was more or less, I guess, retracted. I don't know what you would call what happened to that $2 billion number that was, we're assuming, is devastatingly wrong. But he didn't really do anything. But everybody was on him as soon as something like that came out, because that's the state of things with the Phillies, with John Middleton, with their ownership group right now. I mean, last, like, two weekends ago, the Phillies didn't do anything again, but the Braves did. And everyone was lining up to scream at the Phillies again because they had simply not done so. That's where we're at right now. And when I say the unique dread of hopelessness and leadership, it's like, yeah, things aren't great right now. I'm a little disappointed about what's going on right now, but it's made even more disappointing by the fact that this team has all but announced, hey, don't expect much in the near future.
And that feels... That feels exactly like the late 90s.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. That, like, it just brings back this unfortunately familiar feeling of, like, oh, so not now and probably not soon. I don't know what you want me to spend my money on right now. Like, I feel like I've spent enough emotionally. Like, I can't even begin to think about financially.
Like, I don't have to go to Citizens Bank Park to get crab fries. You know, I can go someplace else for that. You know, there are other places I can go play wiffle ball. You know,
you guys lost the Fanatic. The Fanatic. How did you lose him?
We should have known.
Yeah, that should have been our first.
We should have known. I mean, the incredibleness of Gritty is created, and Philadelphia gets better. And how do the Phillies respond? By ruining the one thing that made them special.
Well, let's cleanse our palate just a little bit to finish up this episode of the podcast. I want to talk a little bit about Aaron Altair, who played over in the KBO, the Korean Baseball League, this season. And his team, the NC Dinos, won the championship. And Aaron Altair had a huge season for them with an .893 OPS and 546 plate appearances, hit 31 homers and 108 RBIs, hit a 3-run home run in game one of the World Series, even caused some controversy during the postseason when he refused to wear a mask as mandated in a postgame awards ceremony press conference after game one. He later apologized, and a team official told the Yonhap news agency that, quote, he recognizes the gravity of the situation. He said he was sorry to have caused trouble and said he will now respect and follow health protocols.
Or I'll be released.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, he's
not a crazy anti-masker. I know it.
He signed a one-year deal. So I guess the question I have is, do you think we will see Aaron Altair in the big leagues in 2021, a la Darren Ruff?
No. Sorry, are you going to me or Liz first?
I don't care.
Matter.
No. No, I don't think you will.
No.
I think we will.
I you know what? I said no, and then the first thing that came to mind was the image of Darren Ruff having that awesome game he had with the Giants this year, and was just like, yeah, you know what? There's enough teams that are lingering at the bottom right now, whether they truly intend to move upward or are kind of trapped because of COVID or trapped because of a talent depletion or whatever, that are willing to fill out a roster with somebody who overseas has a great year and comes over and, you know, gives them something to talk about. Not that it necessarily translates. We all know that success in KBO is obviously different than success in Major League Baseball, but I say no because of watching Aaron Altair before he went over and seeing how he did in Major League Baseball. So I think you can say yes, that a team, we could see him again in Major League Baseball. But what I'll say no to is that he will be successful as a Major League Baseball player.
Hmm. Yeah. here's the thing. He didn't actually even have, I mean, he had a fine season. Like, if he'd hit that in MLB, that would be great. Here's the thing. The KBO has, even though they have intentionally tried to dampen some of their offense, because they've been historically a very high offense league, they still have 20 hitters, at least. And then just looking at page one, 20, I think it's like 26 hitters who are hitting above 300.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. That's a lot of players. It, you know, you need to look at some of the stats to sort of put all of it in perspective.
And he was third on the team with his 31 home runs. So there were obviously two other players on that team who hit more home runs than him. I will admit, I have always been an Aaron Altair guy. I really liked his game. I thought he was going to break out and be a great player. And there is still, I think I've mentioned it on a recent podcast with you guys, I thought that the Phillies coaching staff ruined him, trying to get him to do things he shouldn't have been doing or just didn't match his style. I think Aaron Altair is, I think there's a good player in there somewhere. I think he comes back to Major League Baseball, and I don't know that he's, you know, he becomes a star player or maybe even not even a starter, but you know, I think he could play somewhere. I think he could play effectively somewhere in this league. He's only 29. And I really, you know, when he came up in 2017 and he had portions of 2018 when he was in there, that he was very, very good. And I think the Phillies, I think Gabe Kapler and his coaching staff messed him up in a big way. And I would, if I were a Major League Baseball team, I would absolutely invite him to spring training and see what's there, because I think there's some talent there.
I think that's absolutely fair. Yeah. The lasting image of Aaron Altair is him being unable to hit over 200 or at 200 or at 190.
He was really bad at the end here.
He was terrible. Yeah.
In the last 150 so games of his career, which spanned over two seasons. And I mean, there's not being able to adjust once the league has adjusted to you. And then there's not being able to hit major league pitching. Yeah. And that's kind of what we were looking at. And I don't just mean even with the Phillies. I mean, once he spent, a very, very brief amount of time with the Giants and then a slightly less brief amount of time with the Mets, and didn't really show that like a change of scenery was his issue at the major league level either. So that's why I kind of feel safe saying that I can see a team giving him a chance. That honestly makes a lot of sense. Remember Eric Thames when he came back over?
Yeah, I was just looking up the stats right now.
Yeah. Like that was a big deal. And so, you know, the Major League Baseball, you know, teams will take notice of this. They will. But I can totally buy that Gabe Kapler's methodology kind of messed with his head. But I think we just were looking at a crop of guys that really, you go back and look at the numbers for some of these guys, and it honestly still surprises you. Like, you don't remember any of the teams being very good, but like Aaron Altair hitting under 200 for two of the seasons he appeared in with the Phillies is like, that's really bad. That's so much. Yeah. And I'm with you, John. There was a time where I thought Aaron Altair was like one of those guys who was going to find it.
Oh God.
Who was going to get it. Like, just like Nick Williams. Like, it just seemed like, oh yeah, these guys are going to figure it
these
out.
These were our guys. We wanted to believe.
He hit the only grand slam off Clayton Kershaw.
Yes! I've been waiting to mention that. It's one of the great, one of my favorite all-time home runs.
That's awesome.
I mean, it's just so pure the way he hit that out. It was just
an awesome
beautiful stat.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm with you. But boy, I saw a lot more, you know, and for every at bat where he hit a grand slam off Clayton Kershaw, it just seemed like there were hundreds of others where he did not.
There were. And that's exactly what it was.
that is what I'm saying. Yes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I'm saying that in that is the lasting image of him, is the guy who disappointingly, you know, hit 180 or whatever his last stint with the Phillies. So I could see a team taking a chance on him. At least, you know, John, you bring up an invite to spring training. Yeah, certainly in the realm of possibility. But I don't see him being somebody we're talking about in Major League Baseball as a huge role player.
Eric Thames is one of the only players to come back and have major league success, like sustained major league success. So
it's rare.
It is rare. This is how he did over in Korea before he came over. In 2014, he hit 343, 422, 688. He had 37 home runs. The next year, he had 47 home runs, and his batting average was 381. His on-base percentage was almost 500.
Yeah.
He played in over 120 games all of these seasons. He hit 321 in 2016 and he had 40 home runs. Like this is how good he was doing over there. Aaron Altair is not close to that over in Korea. And I feel like if you're going to come back and have even a chance of making a minor league, you have to have more success than he's had in 1 year.
That's
in
fair.
Korea. Spend another year there. And if he, you know, is still kind of consistent, then I'll say, you know what? Yes, maybe he could have a chance. He's shown at least he knows how to hit a baseball again.
And if he doesn't want to wear a mask, he could have bigger problems pretty soon anyway.
That's true, too. Aaron, wear a mask. All right, let's finish up here, episode number 436, and we'll get to final thoughts. Justin, any final thoughts from you before we wrap up?
You know what? It made for some entertaining time on social media, but I, for one, am glad the Phillies definitely did not lose $2 billion in 2020. That being said, 80 people losing their jobs is no laughing matter, and in a fair world, that's the number we're talking about, more so than the one that was clearly incorrect and poorly reported. So 80 people losing their jobs around the holidays, 80 people losing their jobs anytime. Regardless of the context, these are the people who are getting hit the hardest right now, and that's who our thoughts should be with at this point.
Agreed. Liz, final thoughts?
John Middleton. That's it.
Okay, that is a final thought from Liz Rocher on this episode of the podcast.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
All the way one out of that here. Get him out. I'm so...
And what?
Sell the team. If you're afraid to lose money, then sell the team. Go be cowards like the Wilpons who didn't want to bother or who were too stupid to put money into their team. Go be like them, sell the team, and get out. Just go and do it. I'm so
tired of this. This is what I was expecting earlier.
A little earlier, yeah,
honestly,
me too.
Where were you?
Where
was this? Why is this final thoughts?
We're recording earlier tonight than we do normally.
Yeah.
And I'm a little thrown by it. But seriously,
yeah.
I hate him. I'm so upset about this. I don't know if it's $8 million. Who knows how much they were making? It's almost certainly even more than that because there's health insurance, there's all the life insurance, everything that they pay for. So with benefits, it's certainly more. But you know what? This is what running a business is. You have to take losses in order to move forward. It's not always going to make the same amount of money for you. And the fact that you had in no way prepared for this is a huge indictment of you as a business person. Like, if you don't have a cent put away for a rainy day fund for payroll or for your, you know, in-house payroll, then what are you doing here? What are you doing in business at all?
That's kind of what I'm thinking every time it gets thrown in our faces that baseball is a business, which you see more and more of right now in what you can only assume are burner accounts from Phillies ownership saying like, well, you know, I can't believe this team had to lay off 80 people. I can't believe they lost all this money. Well, they lost all this money and like they can't get that back, and baseball is a business. And why is it baseball a business only excuse for the, you know, the acts of cruelty from ownership when people are losing their jobs? Baseball is a business, like you're saying, Liz, when you don't prepare for a situation like this as well. That's also part of being in business. So it's interesting how baseball never really is a business until they need an excuse.
Yep. I mean, the point of owning a baseball team used to be hand in hand with winning baseball games. Like,
it used to be a job.
I can't believe any of this happened. If only because this is the worst possible PR you could have right now.
Yeah,
this is a fan base that does not forgive. And when he lets JT Realmuto walk out that door, if he does, the fan base will never forgive him. Because everyone has tasted success. Everyone knows what it is, and we were promised success, and we can see it. That's the problem, is that they've been close, and when you can see a path to where you want to be, they don't want to take it because they're pretending they don't have enough money to cross the toll bridge.
Well, I mean, I think that's the fan base's feelings on all this right now. Liz, is I think you're echoing much of what the fan base, if not almost all the fan base, is feeling right now towards the Phillies and the front office. And, you know, there's time to fix it if you're John Middleton and the Phillies. But for 80 people, they can't be fixed. So
it takes so little to get labeled cheap by Phillies, by the fans here in Philadelphia. Yeah. And John Middleton's basically unfurling a banner saying, get ready. This is going to be some cheap spending.
Well, listen, we'll end there and wrap up episode 436 with that. But again, my thanks to Justin and Liz for their expert analysis and some good Phil's talk here on this episode of the podcast.
That felt sarcastic. I'm not
it was honestly not. You guys, honestly not. I value your opinions, and I think it was a very fair breakdown of what's been going on here over the last few weeks.
John,
and
enough
months
with the sarcasm,
team, so.
John. Please.
No. So. You know why I'm never quitting this team? I will hate them, but I will never quit them because they need to be constantly criticized by someone with a very loud voice.
And that is us.
I don't care if I have a podcast or not. I will get a bullhorn and yell things at Citizens Bank Park.
Oh, and she'll do it too. She'll, Mr. Middleton, she will do
it too. I refuse to let any of this go. I will take this stuff to my grave. This is the type of fan that you've bred, John Middleton. The people who like the team out of spite and anger.
I can't wait for the Fandemic crew to become a heckling crew. Like they'll be like other people will come, will get swapped in, but like they'll regret making a bobblehead out of
them. That's right. I didn't even think about that. They absolutely will.
That's right. All right, well, folks, that'll do it for episode 436. Make sure to tell a friend about the Good Fight podcast feed. We got lots of great podcasts. The Dirty Inning, the Todd Zeal episode is fantastic. Make sure you check that out, as well as all the episodes of Continued Success and the episodes of Hitting Season. Make sure that you subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed. Leave those ratings and reviews, folks. That they go help the podcast go a long way. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hitting Season.